You're listening to the Flasco Oncopod, brought to you by the Florida Society of Clinical Oncology, the voice of oncology in Florida.
Hello, everyone. My name is Ivan Borello. I am currently the director of the myeloma, bone marrow, and cell therapy programs at Tampa General. I'm here today to talk to you about the role of MRD, specifically how we incorporate it in the treatment of our myeloma patients. I would like to start by saying over the past 25 years, basically since the turn of the century, there has been a considerable evolution and revolution in the treatment of multiple myeloma, to the point that we went from therapies that had a complete remission rate of around 5% to treatments now where patients in excess of 60-70% are obtaining complete remissions with the current novel therapies and combinations. And as a result of that, the definition of a complete response has been further defined and perfected to the point that the deepest response that we can now consider is one of minimal residual disease negativity. There have been primarily two strategies that have been used to measure this. Historically, one has been flow cytometry, and there is the Euroflow panel that was primarily developed in Spain that has a sensitivity of around 10 to the minus 5 or 1 in 100,000 cells. Another approach is molecular testing, primarily available through Adaptive globally, that has a sensitivity of as low as 10 to the minus 6 or 1 in a million cells. This has really allowed us, I think, to better delineate the overall efficacy of therapies to the point that the FDA this year has actually incorporated or allowed for MRD testing to be used as a primary endpoint in many clinical studies, considering how long progression-free survival and overall survival can be in patients, thus making those outcomes for clinical trials very lengthy. But more importantly, I think at a practical patient-specific level, the rationale for using MRD testing, I think, stems from a variety of things. For one, algorithms are currently being looked at in terms of understanding how long to proceed with treatment in subsets of patients, and I'll get to this in a while, and also to potentially modify treatments in another subset of patients. So specifically, I can tell you that in my practice, what we're doing is obtaining bone marrow biopsies at diagnosis, where a sample is being sent for clonotypic analysis to Adaptive. This allows for determination of the specific clones that can then be followed throughout the course of the patient's disease. We do not necessarily repeat a bone marrow biopsy in patients unless they are either going to transplant, and as such, that would be their second bone marrow biopsy, which would be their pre-transplant biopsy. Alternatively, for patients that are not going to transplant, if they were to achieve a complete remission or actually a stringent remission, meaning a negative M spike, immunofixation is negative, and normalization of the serum free light chain ratio. In those patients, the next step would be to determine whether they are in a molecular remission with MRD negativity, and I tend to use 10 to the minus 6, as there is data and extensive data to actually show that the deeper the response, the more meaningful it is. So although some clinical trials have actually categorized MRD negativity as 10 to the minus 5, 10 to the minus 6 is what we can get from the Adaptive commercially available tests, and is clearly a biologically more significant measure of disease response. So for patients that are MRD negative, and it have low risk cytogenetics. What I tend to do is to use this as a measure to begin to dose de-escalate patients' therapies, and with the caveat being that we would ultimately need to be following them with more frequent bone marrow biopsies to guarantee that there is ongoing MRD negativity. I can also tell you that in a subset of patients that have low risk disease, are MRD negative, and are otherwise transplant eligible, I also have a conversation with them as to whether transplant is an avenue that they want to pursue. And the rationale for that is based on data from the IFM 2009 trial that compared RVD alone to RVD followed by transplant with RVD consolidation and then Revlimid maintenance. And what they showed in that trial was that there was a higher rate of MRD negativity in the transplant arm compared to the non-transplant arm, which I think sort of reestablished the role of transplantation for the treatment of myeloma. But interestingly, it also showed that if patients achieved MRD negativity, irrespectively of whether they got transplant or not, they did exactly the same in terms of their PFS. So my interpretation of that data is that the goal of treatment should be to achieve MRD negativity. An MRD negative patient that got there with transplant is probably not necessarily in any better shape or with deeper MRD than somebody has that has gotten there with just chemotherapy alone. So again, for patients with low risk disease that are MRD negative, and are not necessarily interested in transplant, I think those are the subsets of patients for whom close monitoring, continuing them on their induction with some sort of a maintenance modification, and frequent surveillance with bone marrow biopsies to continue to check MRD negativity is a reasonable approach. In the post-transplant setting, we routinely get bone marrows at day 100 and measure MRD negativity at that setting, as there has been data to show that patients that are MRD negative and PET negative at day 100 tend to have the best overall outcomes compared to patients that are MRD positive and PET positive. And obviously, those that are positive for only one of those two factors tend to have sort of an intermediate outcome. For patients that are MRD negative in that setting and have low risk disease, that could be a reason to be treated with less maintenance therapy. In our case, we would only use Revlimid alone. Alternatively, if still MRD positive, we are now maintaining them with daratumumab plus lenalidomide as maintenance therapy, and we'll continue to follow them that way. I think one of the biggest challenges with MRD testing is what to do in patients that go from MRD negativity to MRD positivity, especially if it really is going from 10 to the minus 6 to 10 to the minus 5. And I think really the answer is that we don't know truly what to do, but I also believe that most myeloma experts would probably be somewhat nervous to just sort of watch this and observe. But I would argue that there are subsets of patients in whom that is a totally reasonable thing and could be done with close monitoring. I think in patients that convert from negativity to positivity, like I just mentioned, one thing that would be reasonable to attempt would be to get peripheral blood and check MRD status in that setting. And the reason I say that is because we know, obviously, the blood is a lot easier to measure than the bone marrow is. But unfortunately, we know that the level of detection in the peripheral blood is approximately 2 logs less sensitive than the bone marrow is. However, if somebody is going up, and they are positive in the blood, that obviously is an easier and less invasive way of monitoring their disease and ultimately their response to therapy than it would be with repeated bone marrow biopsies. So that would be a setting in which I think peripheral blood MRD testing in myeloma would be a reasonable approach. I think that, as I mentioned, whether changes in the overall degree of MRD positivity on routine bone marrow examinations is something that warrants change in therapies is a highly individualized question for which we currently have no data, but certainly something that is a cause of significant anxiety both for the patients as well as for the healthcare providers, and hopefully something that will be answered in the next few years. So I would just like to summarize by saying that I think it's important in the current era of myeloma treatments to continue to consider the use of MRD monitoring, that the goal of treatment should be to try to reach MRD negativity, and that that can actually determine in some cases the treatment directions, i.e., whether to go to transplant or not, based on a variety of other factors that I mentioned, in a significant subset of patients. It's exciting to think that there have been strong correlations with clinical outcomes to the point that the FDA has now granted approval of this for clinical trials as an endpoint. So I would like to conclude with that and thank you for your attention.